Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Alright, welcome to Razor Riffs. I'm in Vegas at the Tropicana Hotel. Alan Lee couldn't go because he doesn't like Vegas. And I got my guest here who I've been trying to get in the studio for a long time, Harry Basil. And you're not the owner.
You're part owner. Yeah, the general manager and the booker.
The booker. He's the general manager. Do you book all the
clubs? No, I book, I'm part owner of the Vegas Club and the Reno Club.
Yeah.
And I book both of those.
Yeah, he books both of them. And he's also a great comic. He toured a lot with Ronnie Dangerfield. Right? Mm-hmm. So, and you're finally doing the show.
And I worked together the first time you were here.
That's true. That's
because
true.
Jeremy Hotz was supposed to headline.
And he broke his arm.
He got in a car accident.
He got in a car accident?
Yeah, it was a car accident.
Oh, he told me he just broke his arm.
No, it was a car accident.
Oh, it's funny how they always change the stories.
Unless he lied to me.
I think maybe he didn't want to tell me
maybe he was on the toilet.
Yeah.
It was an embarrassing story. Well, so he said car accident.
Well, there's some guy, because like I was actually in a car accident and I actually died. I like almost died. And like I don't like to tell people that because like then they think, oh my god, you know. So I'll say like, oh, like I tripped and fell. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
So it's not that same. So maybe that's because he knows I'm a very attached to him. So maybe he said that to me, so I wouldn't.
Oh. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right. Okay.
But we'll tell him that we won't even mention that when you see him today.
Okay. Yeah. I just love to start off a podcast with a car accident.
Yeah. 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 That's always how you get, how you start. The good podcasts, but no, man, you take a lot of pride in this club. I really like because like last time I was here, you know, every single show, you know, you always like critiqued my comedy, and you know, you were actually really more about the audience, which is not like what a lot of club.
Well, because you know, well, this is the thing. This is a headliner room.
Yeah,
it's Vegas. They're paying $39, $49, and $59 a ticket. So they got to see stuff. It's got to be killer stuff.
Yeah.
And in the day and age of Yelp and social media, where somebody doesn't like a show, next thing you know, they're going and they're going to say things. You know, like, hey, this guy sucks, or he shouldn't be on stage, or.
But what I'm saying is, you're really good about the customer service, about the audience. Like, you care really about their experience.
Well, yeah, we care, but also I care about the comics too. You know, I mean, the comics actually come first. As long as they're respectful,
right,
and they're doing their job. If the comic is a jerk, well, no, then they don't come first. But I kind of learned that from Mitzi Shore. Yeah. When Mitzi had her clubs. And the Dunes, you know, in Vegas, and even the Hollywood Club, the comics always came first with her. If there was a person who complained or wanted their money back or complained about a comic, she was, you know, fuck you, you know, the comics come first. So I like that. And then this staff that I have, you know, they all worked for Bob Kephart, who had the Comedy Stop. And the comics didn't come first.
Yeah.
So I kind of let them know, no, they do. The comics are the stars. You know what I mean? And they need to be treated like stars. And that's why we have this great dressing room. And
it's a great dressing
room. We stock it with food and booze and, you know, and take care of the comics.
You know, when I first did this room last year, you have all these pictures of great albums. I actually really thought they were the albums and you just, like, put the frames on them. I didn't know they were... Are they the albums?
Well, they are the albums, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so they're actually that.
No, those are all comedy albums inside the...
So
the,
I was right then.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's... Why would you...
Oh, I thought you just
no,
took
people,
the pictures.
People frame, no, people frame comedy albums.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So you, like, for instance, all these... he's talking about, like, on the wall in the green room, one whole wall is covered with comedy at LPs.
Yeah,
and
I thought
if you go to any record store, there's a whole comedy section.
Yeah.
And they're not expensive. I mean, they're like from $3 up to $9. The most expensive one was an old Lenny Bruce one, was like $10. Yeah. But they're basically about $5. And I buy them for the comedians that I like and also the artwork. There's some really cool
like
covers up there.
Steve Martin ones.
Yeah,
really
Steve
cool.
Martins are great. And there's... a Sam Kennison one with him holding a match. There's George Carlin class clown with his finger, middle finger up his nose. And, yeah. You know, they're just fun, you know. And I've got so many more that I haven't even framed yet.
Yeah, well, that's...
The frames cost more than the actual albums do. Wow. And what I want to do one day is get a record player in here that's also a CD burner, you know. And then put all of the albums in a filing box, so if the comics want to hang out after the show and listen to a comedy album, they could.
That would be awesome.
And then if they want a copy of it, there'll be a stack of CDs they could burn a copy of it. So this way nobody will steal it. So
that would be cool.
Yeah, that'd be fun to kind of hang out.
Oh my God.
Hey, let's listen to Robin tonight, or let's listen, you know, to Steve Martin in between shows.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome, man. Steve Martin, he's... I've always loved him, but he's now doing, he does concerts now with Martin Short.
And yeah.
Martin Short does the stand-up comedy. Steve plays like a banjo.
Well, he plays the banjo, yeah. He's always played the banjo, but they are doing comedy together, which is great to see Steve Martin doing comedy again. I watched the Netflix special, and it was, there was stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, it's written out, and I'm sure they improvise, you know, when they're performing together. But I heard stories about Steve Martin. Steve is a very rehearsed comic.
Yeah.
Everything was always planned and rehearsed. I'm sure he could be brilliant at improvising. But a friend of mine was an editor on Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah.
And he said that John Hughes would always throw lines to John Candy right while they were rolling, and John Candy would just do it. And I think Judd Apatow works that way too.
Yeah.
You could watch the behind the scenes of 40-Year-Old Virgin, and you know the whole Kelly Clarkson when he's getting waxed. Judd will just scream out a line, and his actors will just do it, just stay in character and do it. So John Candy was great at that, and John Hughes was doing that to Steve Martin, and Steve Martin, like, you know, cut and took him aside and said, look, I have to think about a line. I rewrite it. So he didn't give any more lines to Steve Martin that way, but kept throwing them to John Candy because they had come from that Second City background.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That's very interesting about Steve Martin because he seems like he'd be a perfect guy to do that line.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
But Rodney was like that too. Rodney was extremely rehearsed. He would analyze a joke. He would change a word here or there. He was funny to hang out with. He would come up with a line. Like when we would do movies, everything was all planned out, and there were a lot of one-liners from his act in it.
Right.
And sometimes he'd crack up people on the set, and we go, oh, Rodney, that's hysterical. You should put it in the movie. You go, yeah, really? And then I'd have to go back to the trailer with him and spend a half an hour trying to work it into the dialogue.
Yeah.
Cool thing about Rodney and his movies, there were a handful of comedians that could take a joke from their act and stick it in, like, dialogue.
That's
Groucho
amazing.
Marx,
yeah.
W.C. Fields, Rodney, and Billy Crystal. Billy Crystal's another one.
Billy Crystal.
Like, you know, if you watch...
Paris.
Yeah, but what was the one, the cowboy one? City Slickers. There's a lot of one-liners in that that are like, from an act.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're definitely stand-up kind of one. And Bugs Bunny was like that, too. You know, Bugs Bunny was almost like a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
You know, had a lot of one-liners and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's actually very interesting. Yeah. But I never thought about Bugs Bunny.
Who was the first comedy album you heard that you were like, not even wanting to be a comic, just like you and your friends, like, oh my God, listen to this, and it was like you felt like you were the only people, in town or on earth that discovered this funny person.
Well, one, when I was a kid, I didn't have any friends, but I did listen to comedy.
Thanks for bringing me down.
No worries. But this answer is totally going to shock you. Like, literally shocking,
okay.
Because it's not one of the classics like Rodney or whatever. But it was Fred Stoller.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. So...
He's funny guy.
Yeah, but it's a shocking answer,
right? No, I guess.
Yeah, like no one says he's the first comic I've ever
heard. Yeah.
But I remember watching the Young Comedian special. It was him, Drake Slater, Warren Thomas, Spade, Schneider, and Fred Stoller. And Dennis Miller actually hosted that one. Fred Stoller was the most unique one because his humor, like, it kind of related to me because that's how I was. I was very shy and out, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I, like, the joke.
Maybe the voice, too, because he was a real character type, too,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then, you know, it was just so weird because then years later when I started doing comedy, I actually worked with Fred for a while. So, like,
he called me about a year ago. He was writing a... He was either writing a book or something about
maybe,
those HBO specials.
Yeah, maybe we'll have you back.
Because I was in the first one with Rodney, and he interviewed me and asked me about it and stuff, because I guess he was in, like, one of the earlier ones.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's cool. I my buddies and I, of course, was Carlin, the seven,
yeah,
you know, word, dirty words that you can't say on TV. And Cheech and Chong. Hey, it's me, Dave. Open the door. I got stuff. Dave's not here, man. You know that one. And then Bill Cosby. There was one about getting hit with a slushy snowball and how he saved it in his freezer for a year to get even with the guy, and then his mom threw it away or whatever, like he was going to hit him with it. Yep. But I just remembered those three particular albums. And they weren't mine. They were buddies, because I didn't have a record player. I wasn't into music. But, that was the first time I actually heard a full-on stand-up act.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember, I remember that made me feel, really happy inside, a different outlook and, I don't know how, when people hear a comedy, how they think of it, but, for me, it felt like, this is amazing. When you hug Santa Claus, when you get off him?
Sure.
It was like that feeling. It was just awesome.
Unless he's got a boner in there.
Yeah.
And it's an awkward experience.
Well, you know, I don't remember Santa's boner.
What about the first time you went into a comedy club?
Oh, the first time I went into a comedy club was when I was 16. I snuck into the Irvine Improv to go see Norm Macdonald.
Oh, cool.
And
then you wind up knowing him and becoming friends with him. That's great.
Yeah, and that was when I was very nonverbal. Comedy made me more verbal because I have autism, and I was very, me talking like this.
Yeah.
When I was, 12 and 13, this wouldn't.
Oh, wow. So you you'd just be sitting there quiet, rocking or something.
Exactly. I was comedy made me more verbal.
And that's great.
I still have the speech stutter, and the older I get and the more comedy I do, it gets better.
You know, that's what's great about Jamie Masada's comedy camp.
Yeah.
You know, it's for inner city kids. Tiffany Haddish came out of that. She had some problems.
She's my favorite comic right now.
She's like, I keep saying she's the next Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
She's going to be on that. She's almost at that level now. Movie star. She could just do it all.
Yeah.
And she's selling out everywhere. And she wanted to play here, and I didn't book her. Because, she was pretty dirty. And I saw her at the Christmas party, the Laugh Factory Christmas party. She was like, you blew it. I'm too famous now for you to book me. I go, I know, Tiffany. I fucking blew it,
Because even when
we were booking the theater, I think you were here last year, and I told you I was doing some big shows in the theater. I spoke to her agent, and I said, Danny, who else do you have? This was that APA. And he goes, Tiffany's going to be really big after this movie. I'm going, yeah, but it hasn't come out yet. I can't book her in an 1,100-seat theater. Sure enough, that movie comes out. She's a bona fide star, and now she's selling out at the Aces of Comedy over at the Mirage.
Yeah.
So I blew it.
But at least, you feel... I think that's one of those things you blew that you actually feel good about, though, because,
I'm happy for her. I couldn't be happier for her. Yeah. She deserves it.
Yeah.
She works so hard, and she's so talented, and she's the funniest comedian on panel.
She
kills it on panel, you know? It's like the old... this just dates me, but, when I used to watch The Tonight Show, and Rickles would be on, or Rodney, or Burt Reynolds, or one of these stars that just fucking killed it on panel. Colbert loved her. Fallon, she's just fucking great.
Yeah,
she's so real. She's not a phony. That's what's great about her.
Did you ever do panel on those shows?
I did panel on Joan Rivers for just a little bit. I did stand up first.
Yeah,
I think I was on panel with Henry Winkler and Rhea Perlman.
Oh. Henry was cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, was he really nice?
He was not the Fonz, Henry Winkler, but he was nice.
Yeah, he's just one of those guys who just seems because in all of his movies, he's the character I'd pay attention to.
Yeah. I loved him in
Click.
He's in this new show called Barry.
Oh.
Oh, God, from the SNL, he was also in Superbad. He played one of the cops with Seth Rogen.
Bill Hader,
yeah.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
He's a hitman, but he wanders into an acting class because there's a guy that he has to, bump off.
Yeah.
And then they pull him up on stage, and he's hooked. And Henry Winkler plays a drama teacher, and he's fucking great. And he's nominated for an Emmy, and Louis Anderson, who's one of my best friends,
yeah.
is nominated for Baskets again this year.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
I said, Louis, congratulations. And he goes, yeah, but I'm up against Henry Winkler, and he's never won an Emmy.
Oh.
You know, so, and he's, you know, this is a big deal for Henry Winkler. So,
has Louis won before, though?
Louis won the first year. And oh. Louis beat out Ty Burrell from Modern Family and Adrian Brunner from, what is that cop show that,
I know Andy's, what you're talking Andy, about. Yeah. I don't know the name of
God,
it.
God, I'm a little lost for words, for names tonight, but,
But if Louis does lose, at least he won one before.
Yeah, he won the first season. That's great.
That's
yeah.
like, you know, that's...
I mean, to win, to be in your first... I mean, Louis's been around a long time, and he's won two Emmys for Life with Louis, daytime Emmys for the animated show, but to win an acting Emmy is fucking cool.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say fucking?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
fucking.
Yeah.
There you go.
I only get charged $20 per curse yeah. word. It doesn't
okay,
matter.
Okay, there we go.
No, you get it. It's cool.
Hey, did you see... Norm's Comedians in Car Getting Coffee with Seinfeld. It's very funny.
I know he was on it. I did not watch
it. Oh,
it's
great. It. You gotta watch it. It's hysterical.
No, I did not watch it. But you know why?
And they're in the tiniest car. Norm is so big.
Yeah, he's a tall guy.
Yeah.
But you know what? You know why I didn't watch it? Because, and I'm probably... I'm just not the biggest Jerry Seinfeld fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He does nothing for me.
I like Seinfeld, but I also like to hear... these comics.
I'd seen the guests would be more, yeah.
Yeah. Like the one with Zach Galifianakis is very funny. Gary Shandling is brilliant. I love Gary Shandling. He's like one of my favorite comics of all time.
But like, it's because like my adopted uncle's Patrick Warburton, and he was on Seinfeld with Jerry Seinfeld. He played David Putty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So when.
When you say he's your adopted.
He's my stepdad's best friend.
Oh, okay.
So like, they grew up together, so they're like brothers.
He's great.
So we call him Uncle Pat, you know? And I remember, like, when I did comedy, Pat already did Seinfeld, but he was on Rules of Engagement. Everyone would ask him Seinfeld questions about Seinfeld. I would be like, what's David Spade like? I would be like, because I think that Spade, in my opinion, is a better comic. You know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
But if you ask every single comic, they'd be like, you're fucking crazy. You know what I mean? Like,
Spade is better comic than who?
Seinfeld.
Oh, okay.
Like that, you know what I mean? Like, they'd be like, what are you smoking? You know what I mean? Like,
a friend of mine just saw Spade and Ray Romano together and said that they enjoyed Spade's set better.
Yeah.
But, you know, Romano's gone through a lot of material.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That would be a great show.
But I love Ray Romano. The first time I worked with Ray here at this club when it was the Comedy Stop.
Oh, really?
Yeah, back in the 90s.
Did you manage that, too?
No, I was just... that was owned by someone else. I was just working it.
Oh, nice.
And George, our maitre d', and Blanco, and Steve, they all worked for Bob Kephart. So when I took over this club after Brad Garrett left here, I called these guys up and said, hey, man, I'm opening up the club. I want you guys to come work for me.
Oh, that's really awesome.
Sometimes we have guests come in who were here 25 years ago when it was a Comedy Stop, and they can't believe that they still see George here or Blanco, you know.
But you know what else I really like about this club is you're very humble to comedians who aren't even on the show. You allow them to come in and just hang out.
Watch the show.
You do a karaoke night.
Yeah, except for blacks. We don't have blacks. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
I was going to say, I thought I saw Bruce Jingles here once.
I'm kidding, of course.
No.
I love my black people. Where are the blacks? Where are my blacks?
That's a good Trump impression. Oh, man. Do you do Trump on stage?
I do a little bit of it.
Oh, yeah?
You gotta be careful here, though. You gotta be, you know, I don't want to be too offensive and have people, you know, pissed off. You know?
But I think Trump impressions are now popular because he's president. But remember when he wasn't president, no one did.
Well, what's his name was brilliant at it from SNL. God, he works at the Comedy Store a lot now. Daryl Hammond.
Oh, Daryl Hammond. Yeah. Oh, dude,
he's great.
Would you say he's probably one of the best impressions?
I'd say he's one of the best ones out
there,
bar none. Looks like them, you know, just, I mean, I love Dana Carvey's also because they're just so silly and over the top, you know, but Daryl Hammond, hands down is great.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't really seen Frank Caliendo that much. Yeah. You know, I know he does Dr. Phil and Madden, George Costanza, you know, what's his name from Seinfeld, but I love Hammond. He's great.
Yeah, I would say he's one, because I don't like impression in comedy, but whenever I see him, I just laugh because it's so dead on.
I love Norm's Letterman.
Letterman?
And then his... Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
Because I directed Burt Reynolds in a movie.
Oh, in the meat?
No, it was a...
You didn't direct that?
This one I wrote.
Oh.
I wrote and produced Meet Wally Sparks. But I directed a beach volleyball comedy called Cloud Nine.
Yeah.
Where Burt Reynolds, like, puts together this beach volleyball team of strippers, you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then they want to be taken seriously, you know, and kind of go out for the Olympics. D.L. Hughley's in it.
Oh, I love D.L.
Oh, my God. Who the fuck? Gary Busey's in it. Tom Arnold.
Oh, I love Tom. Tom's my boy.
A bunch of comedians. I put a whole bunch of comics in the movie, and some real hot chicks are in it.
Yeah.
There's this TV show called Vikings.
Right.
The lead girl on that, the blonde.
She was in that?
She was in that movie, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I see a lot of... Oh, and then this actor, Paul Wesley, who had a supporting role, he's the star of Vampire Diaries.
Yeah.
The good brother, not the asshole one.
You know? Oh, okay.
Anyway.
But it's still a big role.
Yeah, yeah, it's on like...
But he was in that, the volleyball.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So Bert was great to work with, and he's just a fucking legend. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, everybody loved Burt Reynolds.
Yeah. How long, because you toured with Rodney for a long time. How long did you actually do that?
17 years, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was in his first HBO special, the ninth Young Comedian special in, like, 84.
Yeah.
And then, like, 2 years later, after he did a couple more, he wanted to put together a show called Rodney and Friends, and he wanted to use, like, some comedians from his past specials. So it was Robert Schimmel, Saget, myself, Rodney, and someone else. And Rodney got to see my whole act.
Wow.
And then he was... Because in the special, I only got to do, like, 7 minutes.
Right.
And he was like, man, you want to open for me, you know? And
oh,
then,
that's...
And then when we started working together, the second time I worked with him, he says, man, you're really in the movies. You know, you're wrecked. You ever write a script? And I said, oh, I'm reading a book on screenwriting right now called How to Write a Screenplay in 21 Days that Steve Odekirk gave me. You know, Steve Odekirk, who wrote Ace Ventura 1 and 2 and all the Thumb movies.
Yeah,
he's a great screenwriter, brilliant director. So Steve gave me this screenwriting book and sold me his laptop with a screenwriting program. So the very first movie I wrote with Rodney was called The Fourth Tenor. And Rodney, at one gig, showed me this treatment. He goes, man, I got two treatments. I want you to read them and tell me which one you like better. And one was for The Fourth Tenor, where he was an opera. He owned, like, a restaurant in New York City with singing waiters.
Mm-hmm.
And he falls in love with the singing waitress. But she tells him that she can only love a man who could sing opera. So he goes to Italy and learns how to become an opera singer. And he finds this magic wine that gives him this great voice so he can go back and get the girl. And then the other one was he worked at an advertising agency and he found this cologne that made him irresistible to women. So they were both kind of like fantasy comedies. So I read the two. They were both about 5 pages long. And he goes, which one did you like better? And I said, oh, the opera one. He goes, me too.
Yeah.
Can you believe Warner Brothers hired two writers to write the other one? He goes, do you want to write a screenplay with me? And I said, yeah, sure. So he paid me to write it. He said, you're not going to get any writing credit on it because it's my idea. But he paid me like 20 grand to write a long treatment, like a 45-page treatment. And then I added so much to it. And again, the book really helped me out a lot.
Yeah.
And one of the big things in the book is to put the movie on index cards. You know, each scene, and you tape it up on the wall, and you could see the first act, second act, third act.
Yeah, that's...
And then you could write dialogue on each card. We wrote it in, like, 21 days. And, so after we did the treatment, he was like, you want to write the full script with me? And again, you're not getting any credit on this.
Yeah.
So he gave me another $20,000. So this is, like, I used this money to buy a house. This was my first big money that I made as a comic. And at the end of writing the script, he said, you put so much into this, I'm going to give you screenwriting credit with me.
Wow.
And so that script sat in limbo for 10 years. At one point, Ben Stiller was going to direct it. David Perlman was going to produce it. It was going to be done at New Line. You know, we had meetings with Bob Shea and all that. And cut to like 10 years later, And Rodney asked me to direct that movie, and that was my first movie that I directed.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it was so cool, you know, that it came around first. Meanwhile, we had done three other movies. We did Ladybugs and Wally Sparks and another movie called My Five Wives that I was just a co-writer and producer on. But after the third movie that we worked on together, he goes, "You're ready to direct." Because he'd see that I worked closely with the directors and would ask questions and learn how to block a scene and all that stuff.
You know? Did you have anything to do with Back to School?
No. I was only involved with the bombs, all the one that went straight to
video. Oh, no.
But you know what was
funny? Because I heard that you did, but I didn't.
No. What was interesting about that was I was in his special, and he just started to know me. We became kind of friends. And he said, "Hey, man, I'm doing a movie. You might be right for playing my son. But it's not up to me. It's up to the director in the studio." So I screen tested for the son, for Jason.
So maybe that's what I heard.
Yeah. Okay. So I was up for that, and I didn't get it.
You lost it to Keith Gordon, right?
Keith Gordon, who's a brilliant director. And then I wound up getting Peggy Sue Got Married the same week that I didn't get that. But I would have loved to have been in Back to School. I think if Roddy and I were as close as we wound up becoming, he would have just said, "Hey, man, Harry's playing my son, okay?
Yeah.
That's it, you know?" Because that's the way it was later on with the directing. He was like, "Harry's directing the movie, all right?"
But Peggy Sue Got Married was pretty good.
It was fun. And you know what? I was a big fan of Francis Ford Coppola, and all my scenes were with Nick Cage and Jim Carrey. We played buddies. We were in a group. So it was a lot of fun being on that movie. My first movie, rather than being Boob Party 2, you know what I mean, was working with these Academy Award, caliber people. So that was fun.
Yeah. You mentioned Nick Cage. Nick Cage is kind of, like, I think he's a great actor. But there's also people who think he just plays the same guy every time. You know what I mean?
I don't know about that, because he's kind of a character actor too. I mean, he's really out there. You know, like you could say, hey, Nicholson always plays the same character.
Yeah.
It's shades of Nicholson or shades of Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah.
Whereas Dustin Hoffman is a character actor.
Yeah.
You know, Rain Man to Ratso Rizzo to Billy Bathgate to, you know, he's a character actor that's also a leading man. But Nick Cage, you know, you could love him or hate him.
It's
like some movies
that's
he's
what I'm
really
trying to say.
Some movies he's really over the top and annoying, and some he's just freaking brilliant in.
Yeah.
Rodney used to say, "Man, he's hard to look at."
Oh, because of his hair?
His face, everything. I'm like, okay, what about you, Rodney? You know what I mean? He's hard to look at. But he was great in Moonstruck, you know, Cher. Honeymoon in Vegas.
Oh yeah,
you know. Then of course the action movies that he did later.
Con Air
and The Rock. Yeah. They were fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I liked him in Kick-Ass. The first Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
He was great in that. You know.
How come he wasn't in the second one?
I don't. Well, he got killed and set on fire.
That's true, right? Yeah.
That could, you know.
Yeah.
When you're on fire and dead.
Yeah.
It's hard to bring you back unless you're Frankenstein.
Yeah, that's true.
But and then Jim Carrey wound up doing it, which it was kind of cool that Jim and Nick are friends, and they met on Peggy Sue Got Married.
Yeah.
And Jim Carrey had the room next to mine, and Nick Cage would go into Jim's room, and Jim's friend Phil had a video camera. And I'm talking, this is back in 84, so it was a Beta video camera where the deck was like gigantic, and then it had a cable that went to the camera. And they were in that room all night long making goofy videos. I would love to see this video. Laughing all night to like 3, 4 in the morning.
Yeah. After Jim Carrey? Like on a set? Like on a comedy set?
Have I ever gone after him?
Yeah. Like, you know, like at the store where they... And then like you go after Jim.
Because
it seems like he would be really tough to follow.
You know what though? When I did follow Jim, he wasn't doing his big standing ovation act.
Oh.
He had this really amazing impressionist act that he would get a standing ovation every single show. And, you know, he did, like, Billy Joel. He did Tim Curry from...
I love Tim Curry.
From
Rocky Horror.
He did all these singing impressions, and then he would close with the movie on Golden Pond, and he would do Katharine Hepburn and Henry Fonda. And everyone was just jumping to their feet. And it was just this amazing act. And then he started doing, you know, he had his own show, Duck Factory, and he was doing a lot of movies. And he started hanging out with Kennison and that group.
Yeah.
And Kennison was giving him a hard time, like, what are you doing that Fred Travellina Vegas act? And Jim threw away the whole act. He started from scratch. And he was going up on stage and doing really wild, weird shit, where he would bomb some nights. The comics were in the back of the room watching him going, how fucking brave is he to go up there and just work on shit? And an act started to grow from this. And
yeah.
He took some pieces where he would do some, like he used to do Elvis in his act. Well, now he would do post-nuclear Elvis, and he would tuck his arms into his sleeves where he had like really small deformed arms.
Yeah.
Well, it's one for the money, and the arms would move almost like a T-Rex arms. And it was hysterical. And then he wound up getting in Living Color and all that weird shit.
Word.
Fire Marshal Bill, a lot of those voices that he would do in his act worked. And but it was very brave of him to throw away that act and start from scratch. And he's just such a brilliant actor.
I mean, that's hard to do, too.
The amazing thing about Jim Carrey is we have only seen a tip of the iceberg of what that guy can do.
Yeah.
He's so talented. And all of a sudden I see a movie come out, like even I Love You, Philip Morris, mm-hmm. which is not for everyone, and it was in the can for like 3 or 4 years. He's fucking brilliant in that movie.
Did you ever see International Sunshine of the Mind?
Yeah.
That
totally,
one,
yeah.
He was
great in that.
Blew me away.
The Truman Show.
Yeah.
My favorite comedy is I love Liar Liar. That movie kills me because it's such a brilliant physical performance. That scene when he's beating himself up in the men's room. I'm kicking my ass.
Do you mind? I always thought the do you mind was the punch.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
God,
it was
so
the punchline of the joke.
Yeah, he's the best. But yeah, it's so funny that they never really did a movie together since that. They became buddies, and they're both like on a planet Mars.
Yeah.
And like Jim was also absolutely brilliant as Andy Kaufman. I think Nick Cage is the only other actor I could think of who maybe could have pulled off the Andy Kaufman character. He maybe wouldn't have gotten the voice down as good as Jim or done the stand-up, but he had that essence of...
Like the physical.
Physically looking like him and just not knowing, being unpredictable, you know? And that's what's great about an actor like Nick Cage. You don't know what the fuck he's going to bring to the table.
I think Robin Williams could have done it, too.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
totally, Robin could have done it too.
Because Robin was, I thought Robin was an amazing actor.
You know what's great about Robin is Robin's best performances were drama with comedic overtones. But he really didn't have a hit comedy. I mean, a great hit comedy until Mrs. Doubtfire, which was an all-out comedy. I mean, Moscow on the Hudson, Good Morning Vietnam, Garp. Those were dramas with comedy in them, you know, the early ones like
Popeye,
and then there was one where it was like a resort, Club Paradise,
Rick Moranis,
and then another one where he and Kirk Russell, they relived their youth and played the same football game again, and then he did another one called Survivors with Walter Matthau. I mean, they weren't, you know, hits. And then after Mrs. Doubtfire, then The Birdcage. I love The Birdcage.
Oh yeah,
and the great thing about Robin in that is Robin could have easily played the other part, you know, the Nathan Lane part, but his part was so controlled. I just loved him as Armin in that movie. He was brilliant.
I really loved Robin Williams.
What a loss, huh?
Yeah, especially to the comedy.
Oh my God!
It was so shocking too.
There's a great documentary on HBO right now about Inside the Mind of Robin Williams.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what? It's the thing that I've noticed. Like, I have a theory that I think that comedians who end their own lives are actually deep down really great comedians. Like Drake Sather, he ended his own life and he was like a great comedian and he kind of told it in his jokes what he was gonna do.
Oh shit!
And, you know what I mean? It's very sad, but that's how much I love comedy. Like all, because every joke is written from heart and truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's just the truth. You know, you could twist it all you want. There's some truth into every single joke.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know,
it all depends on the act and what they're, you know, whether or not they talk about themselves.
Exactly.
Or it's shades of their personality. I think somebody once asked Stephen Wright, what's the difference between his stage persona and his offstage persona? And he said his stage persona doesn't like fish. I thought was a great answer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Who are your favorite comics, like, right now, though? Like, who are working right now, or who aren't even not working, just guys who you think are really good? Like,
I like, top three. I love Bill Burr. I think he's brilliant.
Yeah.
I really like Dice. Still fucking kills me.
Yeah, but Dice is like a
No, but I mean he's still relevant. Dom Irrera just fucking cracks me up. I love Rich Hall. I'll watch Rich Hall anytime he's here because he's always working on shit. He's brilliant. Some of the new guys, I really love Eric Griffin and Chris D'Elia. I think they're hysterical.
Yeah.
I love Brian Scalero. I love Quinn Dale. I think they're both good writers. And I like their acts.
Yeah.
And I like hanging with them. They're buddies too.
Yeah.
Starting out. Oh, Louis Anderson. I love Louis Anderson. Yeah. And again, these guys are buddies too. But I just really enjoy watching them more.
Their comedy. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
There's another guy named Andrew Norelli that I really like. I think he's very funny.
Yeah, I've heard of Andrew.
Yeah.
I've never seen.
Jeremy Hotz is great.
Oh, I love Jeremy.
You know. Tom Papa is another one that I love. I'd love to Tom get Papa. Him here. I don't think we can afford him, but I'd love Tom. Oh, and I fucking love Theo Von. I just think he's fucking brilliant.
He
kills me.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah.
Well, you had Roseanne here a long time ago.
Yeah, right? We had Roseanne here about 3 years ago. She did about a 4-month residency at 7 o'clock, and it was great because she hadn't done comedy in about 10 years, and she kind of came back.
Was she, like, a little rusty, though?
She was a little bit, but after like 3 days, she had it, you know. I think she had a monitor on stage just in case.
Yeah.
You know, with some jokes, some bits on it. But boy, after a week, she was fucking polished. You know, it was wild. Back in the 80s when I worked at the Comedy Store, I started as a doorman. And, you know, Mitzi made me a paid regular. And Richard Pryor was working on his act for Live on the Sunset Strip, and you see Pryor come in, and this was after the fire, and he was healthy and on the mend, and you see him work on material, and the audience would just applaud because it's Richard Pryor and give him that respect, and you saw the inklings of a bit, you know, a premise, and after like maybe 2 weeks you go, oh, there's a joke, he's got a punchline there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then after like 5 weeks or 6 weeks, it's a fucking brilliant piece.
Yeah.
And just seeing how polished he was, and, you know, just had it down. But he was very nervous at the beginning, and just getting back on stage, standing away from the audience, almost all the way against the curtain, and then like after 5 or 6 weeks he's all the way up front at the microphone and pacing a little bit and has the fire and something to say. It was great watching him work.
Yeah.
And seeing a lot of guys work. You know, when I started out, I went on amateur night and stood in line, but I used to pay to go to the store on Friday and Saturday night and go into the main room and watch the big guys. Because you're not going to learn anything just hanging out with other potluckers and amateurs.
I think you learn more when you go see professionals.
Yeah, so I would buy a ticket.
Yeah.
Not to like say, hey, I wanted to take something, but I'd go, all right, this particular guy, he talks about himself. He's got a persona, or, you know, like someone like Louis Anderson talking about being from the Midwest and being heavy. And he had the characters with his mom and his dad and his brother, and then I'd see Jim Carrey and Dice using music and props and doing impressions. And I could always do that ever since I was a kid. So they inspired me, like, oh, you don't have to just stand up there and tell a joke. I could write an act like that. So I came up with my own act, you know. And but it was inspiring, you know.
Yeah.
And everyone, we were all friends. And when Mitzi booked us in Vegas, there was 5 headliners working together. I mean, there's a picture up here on the wall of the first week at the Dunes. It's me, Louis Anderson, Andrew Dice Clay, Paul Rodriguez, Blake Clark.
Oh, I love Blake Clark.
And Jim Carrey. Oh. And that was our first week at the Dunes. It's May 4th, 1984. I was 24 years old. It was my birthday. And it says, Band of Unknown Zanies Invade the Dunes.
Wow.
And it was like we all worked together. And it was like a college. And we helped each other out. And recommended guys for other gigs. I mean, I got in Peggy Sue Got Married because Paul Rodriguez and Louis Anderson, they were in a movie called Quicksilver with Kevin Bacon.
Right.
And the same casting director said, hey, who's hot at the Comedy Store? Someone we should look at. And they both said, oh, you got to see this guy, Harry Basil. And she comes to see me, and I got cast in Peggy Sue Got Married.
And you didn't audition.
I did audition. You know what? They saw me. I didn't even read. They saw me. The producer saw me, and the casting director saw me, and then the producer came to see me, and then I had a meeting the next day, and I had the fucking part.
Yeah, that's
awesome. It was a supporting role, so there wasn't like a full-on scene where they go, hey, here's a lot of dialogue, read this.
But you were singing with...
Yeah, and know, I mean...
Yeah, you were his buddy.
I mean, I worked for the movie on the movie for 6 weeks, you know, yeah. It was pretty cool.
I remember,
but guys helped each other out. It's scary to recommend someone today.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean? Because it's like the guy fucking sucks.
Yeah,
it could affect you. You know?
Yeah, I totally get that. But I remember when I saw Peggy Sue Got Married. I was a kid. I watched it with my dad, and like my dad was like, "Oh, this is Jim Carrey's first movie." And then you find out years later, it wasn't his first movie.
No, it wasn't his first movie. Yeah.
But you know, like I think people were under that belief. But man, Blake Clark,
Blake is.
That's
one of my
awesome
best friends. He's great.
Yeah. He's awesome. I love him.
He's great. We're going to have him come back here. I think I'm going to book... I was talking to him the other day. I'm going to book him and Jerry Bednob.
Yeah.
And bill it as those guys from that movie.
Oh.
They're like, you recognize them from all the movies that they've done. They're both great character actors, you know? And
they're both
and
the nicest guys.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah.
Jerry, don't piss Jerry off, though. I'll get pissed. Oh, fuck you, you fuck. Jerry Bednob was in the 40-Year-Old Virgin. He's the go-fuck-a-goat
guy
that worked with Andy in the video store.
Yeah, I know, Jerry.
It's not about the Dirty Sanchez or the Golden Shower or the Pussy Juice Cocktail. Remember that scene?
Jerry Bednob, like, because I'm friends with him, one of the things that I really click with him is he might be the only guy besides me who knew Rick Moranis did stand-up.
Shit, I didn't know Rick Moranis did stand-up. When was that?
That was, like, in Toronto. Like, I...
Wow.
Like, I... Because I'm a huge Rick Moranis.
Yeah, me too.
You know, so, like, I Googled and I just read all these stories how...
He's been putting out these, like, comedy songs and
stuff.
Yeah,
he's like a country
almost
singer.
Almost like a polka guy or something. And I... Did his wife die? Or,
yeah, she died along.
Yeah, like Marty Short. And then he kind of went to... Canada or wherever he lives and just raising his kids. It's amazing how many big movies Rick Moranis was in and how great he was.
You know what one of the great things about Martin Short is his wife died and he was doing a late show. The guy who interviewed him didn't know his wife died.
Yeah.
So he asked, how's your wife doing? And Martin totally just went, he's like, oh, she's good. She's at home.
It was Kathy Lee. It was Kathy Lee and Hoda.
Yeah.
And she's going, you have one of the greatest marriages in Hollywood. You and your wife have been, you love your wife so much. Yeah, he goes, I do. And but they didn't know it. That's what a gentleman he is.
Yeah, but he played it off so.
He's brilliant. He's like the best, him and Dana Carvey are the two best panel guests because they will always be on. They will always do whatever impression you ask them to do, and they're always entertaining. You know, whenever they were on, like, The Tonight Show or Letterman or whatever, just very entertaining.
Yeah.
I love Martin Short. I just think he's brilliant.
Yeah, you know? That's awesome.
But boy, I would love to see Rick Moranis do something.
Yeah.
He was so good.
He was awesome. He was...
I heard that he was, and I hate to say this, but they same thing with Gary Berghoff, who played Radar.
Right, yeah.
Beloved guy. I heard he was a real asshole, and I kind of heard that about Rick Moranis, too.
Well,
But he took his acting very serious.
Yeah.
He was brilliant in Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, I loved him.
And Ghostbusters. Oh. And...
what was that? My Blue
Honey,
Heaven.
I Shrunk the Kids. My Blue Heaven. Parenthood.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
Well, when I first got this podcast, I wrote Rick Moranis to do it, you know, and when you have a show, you're going to get more no's than yeses, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I didn't expect high hopes, but then they're like, okay, he'll do it for $500. I was like, well, I don't pay people, but it's Rick Moranis, he's one of my heroes, maybe I will, you know what I mean? And they're like, but you can't ask him any comedy questions, you have to just talk about country with him. I was like, not
worth
it. That ain't
worth $500. Like, for $250, I'll talk about country.
Yeah, but like,
Jesus. You know, it's like, you know, I'm going to grab a tissue, but Billy Bob Thornton, you know, is a singer.
Yeah.
And so he was performing with his band on the road somewhere. And the interviewer, you know, in the press junket, they started asking him about, oh, you were great in this movie and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, look, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about my music.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And they'll talk about music, and then they'll go back to. But in this movie, and he got fucking pissed off at them.
Well, Billy Bob did the Norm's podcast, and when he was in there, like the producers were saying, "Oh, what can we talk about?" But Norm and Billy Bob were actually good friends. Billy's like, "No, we can talk about whatever."
Oh, that's cool.
So, you know what I mean? But, like, Billy's very good presence, you know what I mean? Like,
I loved Norm's episode with Letterman.
Letterman.
And they were kind of making fun of Adam Egan a lot. That was kind of funny, about getting hand jobs underneath the Brooklyn Bridge or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. That's, and Norm did the very last stand-up panel for the Letterman show.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. It was really, really touching.
I always love that joke he had about, yeah, you know, you ever see a homeless guy out in the street with a dog, you know? And like, you know, the homeless guy has a choice, but the dog is like, this is the longest walk
of
ever.
My life, yeah. That's one of those jokes that I always see comics still.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah, there's a guy in Lake Tahoe that I saw do that. And then I on the news, a couple of the jokes that I loved, he had, he said, the comedy of Robin Williams, you know, Christopher Reeve said the comedy, this was after his accident, or Christopher Reeve said the comedy of Robin Williams has given him the strength and motivation to live on. On the other hand, the comedy of Pauly Shore makes him wish for the swift hand of death. And then he had another line that I loved about, you know, Bart the Bear in the movie The Bear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the dog, the bear, died of cancer. He goes, yeah, you know that movie, Bart the Bear? Bart the Bear was paid $200,000 for his appearance in the movie The Edge. $100,000 was donated to the preservation of grizzlies, and the other $100,000 he spent on bear hookers. He was the best with the news, man.
He was so good.
I mean, people go, oh, Chevy Chase.
No, I would say Norm.
Fucking Norm was hysterical.
And honestly, I would say the second would probably be Nealon.
Yeah, Nealon was great too, yeah.
And then Charles Rocket was good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jane Curtin was pretty good at it too.
Yeah.
And, oh, and Seth Meyers was great too. I'm a big fan of Seth Meyers, and
but that's when I stopped watching Saturday Night Live, because like I felt like Saturday Night Live got way too political. You know what I mean?
It's always been political, though. I mean, when it first started, it was during the Nixon administration when it first came on. It was extremely political.
But I'm talking like every sketch, like
true. Like, you're right.
Because, like, the sketches used to be about jokes. Like, where's the juice? You know what I mean? And then the Dan Aykroyd clone heads. And then it's just, now it's like...
Yeah, there was when Aykroyd used to do Nixon. And John Belushi would be with, you know, Jew boy.
Yeah.
Oh, my, Mr. President. It was great. I mean, we grew up on that stuff.
Well, we're running out of time, but the last question I wanted to ask you was, you know Fred Wolf?
No, I don't know Fred Wolf.
Oh, man.
Isn't he a writer? Does he write a lot of Adams movies?
Yeah, but he also did stand-up.
No, I never met him.
Oh, well, I was going to tell you a joke and make it funny with Blake Clark.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they're good friends.
Oh,
it's not going to make sense now. Okay. If you don't know Fred, it's...
Blake, since we're talking about Blake, let me tell you a funny story that Blake told me. Blake Clark is a great actor.
Yeah.
He was in The Waterboy. He played Farmer Fran.
Yeah.
At that time, Bobby Boucher. And then he played Drew Barrymore's dad in 50 First Dates. So in The Waterboy, you know, Henry Winkler played the coach.
Yeah.
And they said, look, don't mention the Fonz. Don't do any Fonz jokes. You know, all the actors were told this. Don't bring up the Fonz.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're out drinking after the first week of shooting. They're all in a bar. You know, all the actors and comics and Henry Winkler, and they're all having beers and fun. And they're making toasts to the movie, to this, to that. And they're doing toasts. And Blake Clark goes, to the Fonz! Right? And everyone's just quiet. Everyone's quiet. And Henry Winkler just goes, hey. He does the A thing. And everyone just went nuts.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome. Well, Harry, is there anything where the folks can follow you and, like,
well, I'm on Instagram at Harry Basil and Twitter, you know, Harry Basil.
Are you a big social media person?
I'm dabbling.
Yeah.
I'm not great at it.
It's like you're torn between yes.
I want to be, but yeah. I just don't. I'm not the best at it. I think I've mastered Facebook a little, but I'm shitty with
Twitter.
Twitter and
yeah.
I don't twat. I don't tweet. You know, and. And Instagram, I understand Instagram now is the big thing, you know, like the Laugh Factory Instagram in Hollywood, you know, is huge.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even know if we have a fucking Vegas one. I got to get it going.
Yeah, I'm not even good on social media because I have a social disorder.
Well, there you go. Anti-social media.
Ah, that's a good thing. Right? Harry, thanks so much.
Hey, it was a lot of fun, Keith. It went by really quick.
Yeah. Well, I love you very much, and thank you, too, you so man. Much
and
for
I'm
doing it,
I'm rooting for you, buddy.
Ah, thanks, pal.
All right.
We're great with Harry Basil. If you like the show, subscribe on iTunes, rate, review. Just regular feedback. If you liked it, great. If you didn't like it, just tell us. Thank you so much, guys. Have a good night.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.